On this week's show, is tribalism destroying your construction innovation? With James Faulkner from Sitemax. In this week's news, is Suffolk construction accelerating the change? And more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, Jonathan Marsh, back on the microphone. Seems like I just saw you on a Dorkcast recently. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing excellent. I'm up in Erie, and it's finally warm and nice and sunny. And I'm home, which is great. You know, I was out in New York City when it was all rainy and ugly, and now I'm back here, and it's nice, it's sunny, it's a good day. Looking forward to a good conversation.
Yeah, man, I'm glad you joined me for this one, because the pre-show call, which, you know, I feel like I got to start like recording those and maybe like dropping little nuggets out of them. Probably a little more careful because it's a little more crazy in the pre-studio. But James Faulkner with us today. James, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on, you guys. Went deep in the rabbit hole with you guys last night. Actually, fell asleep to you guys, so it makes me feel better.
Okay, that might be one of the weirder things I've heard. I've heard people say a lot of things. Like I've said, oh, you know, you got to understand my perspective, and somebody was like, I listen to you every week. I know your perspective, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I didn't know that one. And then, you know, I'll say my saying, and they're like, they'll finish the sentence. But falling asleep, that's a new one. Hey, at least you weren't driving while you fell asleep, right? So.
Exactly. And no, it was good. It was good. Maybe I think Jeff, it was your caramel voice that did it. Yeah. It was good.
The smooth sounds on the microphone. Well, we're going to turn this one over on you. So let's talk a little bit about your origin story, a little bit about where you came from. Because it's a fantastic, story on how you got to where you are today. So tell the listeners a little bit about you, what you do these days and what got you here.
Cool, man. Thanks very much. Yeah. I'm 52 years old, so I've done a lot of stuff. Started off when I had a sign company when I was like 20 and I had it in my parents' basement. Making vinyl decals and making signs and selling them all over my town. And I had a computer vinyl cutter to pay for I had like a $400 payment. I had to go and make money. So that's kind of what I did there. And that turned into, I don't know if you know much about vector art, but you know, the logos used to come and they, like a company would give me a printed version of the logo and I'd have to scan it and like vectorize it. And so it would cut on the machine. So I learned vector graphics. That means then I started getting into logo design because their logo sucked and I had to make it for them. And then I got into branding and then I got into website design in 1995. Yeah. And then started a glass company because I had the vinyl cutter. So we used to make decals and then frost through the glass. So you do, you know, glass design. And then, yeah, then started a brand agency. And from there, that got me into employer branding. So do you know what an employer value proposition is?
So I can't say I do.
Yeah. It's basically the ethos of why somebody wants to work somewhere. So I did that for big banks. So for AIM Trimark, Manulife, the cooperators, I did burger chains, I did large restaurant chains and national real estate companies, what it meant to work somewhere. So, but what got me into construction, so let's get to that fast, seeing as this is the theme of this podcast, was I rebranded a mid-sized general contractor. They do tilt-up construction, you know, panels going up, and did a rebrand for them. I think they were doing about $90 million in revenue, and they're doing a lot more now. One day they said, hey, you built a website for us. Is there any way that they can log into the back end of it? And this was in 2011. Can they log in the back of this thing and do their daily report? I'm like, yeah, I could do that. Sure. Make a login. We had it in Drupal at the time. So, you know, I had pretty good user management. So did that. And that ended up sort of just constantly avalanching continuously in development to a point where I said, look, you got to get rid of all your digital cameras. This sucks. You know, I'm going to make an iPad app for you. At the time, Apple, you could make a private app. And so we did that, made an iPad application. And that worked really well. And then this is where the employer branding stuff started really kicking in. This is sort of where Cymax started, is I'm like, look, guys, we need to bring in the culture of the company. We've got this total tribal difference between the office and the field. And you come into the reception, subtrades come in there, they pick up their checks. And, you know, the front desk person doesn't really know what the hell's going on in the field at all. Actually, half the company doesn't actually know what's going on in the field. They just know what's going on in the office. Yeah, they get reports in here and there, but, you know, site visibility is pretty limited. So I'm like, here's what we're going to do. We're taking in a lot of photos. We're taking in 10 to 12 photos per superintendent per day. I'm going to make you a Google Chrome page, and I'm going to get Mac minis. We're going to put them up behind the PM's office and the estimator's office, and it's this thing called Project View. And it's going to cycle through. So John Smith is on this project. It's 80% complete. Here's his photos for the day, and then go to the next project. And that was everywhere in the company. And so that Google Chrome page would refresh every 5 seconds. I burn out a lot of Mac minis, by the way. I did. Their RAM chips were like, yeah, they look like toast. Anyway, one day a subtrade came in and goes, what is that? Like, where are you getting this feed from? And he goes, who built that? I want to talk to that guy. So I'll not mention his name because we don't do that in this podcast. But yeah, still a great friend, still a customer today. Amazing guy. It was at a time where I'm like, you know, I didn't want to do branding anymore because, you know, the service business, I kind of wanted to make something that was worth something at the end of the day rather than me going with it. So I got a bunch of very successful friends, and they said, you know, that thing you built for that company, you should do that. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but they pay me to make it. I can't just like take it. Wouldn't be honest, blah, blah. So I went to the owner of that company. I said, look, I want to start a company called Cymax, and I want to partner with you, and I want to commercialize this product. And that's how it started.
That organic start is always the best way, right, Jeff? I mean, like a lot of software starts and they're coming in. They're like, we want to build software for, you know, an industry. You came and you said, I've started building software for the industry. I want to start expanding what I've built. And getting asked to do like those specific things that are like the small wins. You know, you're not creating features that don't have a direct requirement from those people. I mean, it's one of the better ways to build out those small software pieces. I have a question way back at the beginning. How many years has it been now since that first installation?
Well, it took money from the first customer in 2014.
Okay. So 10 years.
Okay. Okay. Let me just give you a little caveat here. This is crazy. Okay. So this is how venture capital can be dangerous. Venture people are great. They enable a lot of things, but they can also push in the wrong direction sometimes. So we went to World of Concrete 2015 with this product that was built in Drupal. Okay. And we're talking not scalable at all. Went there. You know, got a lot of interest and like, wow, this looks great. I'll send you guys a photo of it one day. And came back. I had a really successful friend of mine who was financed by a large, large VC. We're talking huge. One of the biggest ones. You probably know it. I won't name the name. I went down there and they said, okay. And I met with a bunch of VCs. They said, look, it's great what you're doing with Cymax here, but you know, there's this other big company we've talked about, Big Orange, we'll call it that. And they said, everyone's betting on them. You know, you got to do something super like innovative. And I'm like, oh, damn it. Okay. So I come back to Vancouver. I'm thinking, oh my God, I've gotten this guy that, you know, I got to pay for the business here and lots of money's in there. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I actually pivoted at that point. And I started something called Build Boom. And Build Boom was LinkedIn for construction. I know. So I went to World of Concrete. I went back and I had like the Build Boom girls and we walked through and we had people signing up. I had a couple of banks. I had some truck companies and they were all interested in getting into that market and knowing these people. I had people signing up, putting the jobs. Essentially what it was a Hansel and Gretel kind of trail of all the jobs you've done because you would check in and you would say, I'm at this job. So for the field worker who is not on LinkedIn and wants to, you know, they'll go up to a job site one day and be like, hey, so what jobs you worked on? He goes, oh, I don't know. I worked on, you know, they'll say an address or say, hey, you know, back on Main Street down there, I did that 3 years ago. And there's no real cohesive record. So that was what that was for. But anyway, went back there and then talked to the investors, and they're like, yeah, okay, well, we kind of like the Sitemax thing. Okay, great. So that's that. And so what I did was I got my engineering team together and I said, look, we're going to rebuild Sitemax from the ground up. And then it relaunched in 2017. And then it really started going then, back when, yeah, the sort of the interest in digital was really starting to take hold.
Yeah, I was going to say that's right at the like at the precipice of when all the big companies were really starting to realize this construction thing was a thing. I love the you know, you were you may have even been one of the list. There was this list we created at one point back in the day of like all the folks that tried to be LinkedIn for construction, and it always, I always was like, well, isn't that what LinkedIn is? Like, it kind of is that.
Relax, so, Jeff, relax.
But I love it. You know, that's all right. But I'm with you, man. Those Mac minis, like that problem that you solved, you created something, and then, you know, they came to you for one little thing. And then I'm interested in why so important to connect the field to the office and overcome that disconnection. Cause that actually, like when I was at the masonry company, we used to do that. We didn't use Mac minis. We used all these pictures. We weren't nearly as hot as what you were doing. They were just like pictures of our job sites, pictures of our stone, pictures of some of our people working. And it would, you know, cycle through on every TV. So people kind of knew we build things, you know, we do stuff. So I'm interested in what you think about connecting the field and the office.
Well, the field and the office, I mean, in its essence, the office is a dream of a project that's finished. It is. It plans. It's what they hope it will be. The job site is what it is. That's the reality of it. That's what is actually going on. That's how much money is actually being spent. That's how much time is actually being used. That is the who are the people that are showing up or not showing up. This is where the rubber hits the road. So, you know, the interesting thing about Sitemax is, yeah, it's a field tool, but it's really for the office. It's to inform the office of what is going on. If you don't do that, then you're running blind.
And also, I think that disconnect becomes really, really problematic when you're trying, you know, when I was working for a contractor, primarily I was doing virtual design and construction and BIM and technology integrations. And till some of that technology started to be field technology and, you know, just got the scanners and the point layout and all that, you really didn't see what was being built. And so you got this idea, like you said, of those aspirational goals that the architect has and everything else. And you get back out there and the thing that took you 4 fittings in the office took the guy 16 fittings in the field. And you're looking at your labor chart going, this is probably not good. Where a simple picture of, hey, this is what I did today. You could have said, oh, wait. You're either in the wrong spot, you're using the wrong means and methods, you're doing something that's outside of what we were planning to have done. And usually they're good things. And usually it's more that the office needs to change their plans and then the guy in the field needs to change what's being created or built. But I was always kind of blown. We didn't do what both of you did, which I'm sitting here going, wow, that would have been great to see what was being built and to show everyone who's working, spending all this time and effort, what they're building in the field. With that first company, when you started to do this, you know, you were closer to that company than I would imagine some of the companies even today. Did you see a big cultural shift in either the field or the office as they started to get some transparency between the two?
We really put that together. I mean, keep in mind, like I was still the brand manager of that company for like the first 3 years of Sitemax. So, I mean, I was like way in there. I really did notice a coming together of just a community side of things. You know, we can talk about, you know, that sort of tribalism of field and office, and, you know, later I think we're probably going to chat about that, but it really does bring together that feeling of, I'm not sure what it really was. It was just a familiarity. It's even just having one small conversation of, wow, yeah, I see that project is really coming along. You know, when they all come to the office, sometimes they come to the office for whatever meetings, and even having some project consciousness of where it was at the time really brought everyone together. But, you know, that's just, we're just talking about the photos side of things. I mean, you know, Cymax does, you know, you upload your drawings in there, you, all your safety is in there, all your reporting, custom forms, all the stuff that used to be in a clipboard or, you know, in those steel cases, is all in Cymax.
And it's a unique piece to bring those two together and kind of connect all the information, because you're right. We've got an idea and we've got a deliverable and we want to connect those people together. I tell the story years ago when I started with the masonry company, let's just say it wasn't the easiest process, right? Especially because, you know, I'm an IT guy. I worked in offices. I worked in developing software. And so like, I didn't understand it until I started playing softball with the field team. Like one of the guys from the, like one or two of the estimators played, and they were like, yeah, you should. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll meet, you know, some of these people. And they start talking to me about what they're doing. They're like, yeah, stop by, come see the site, you know? And all of a sudden you start to realize that we build these amazing things. And then you're starting to think, hey, my technology is having a hand in building this. And now all of a sudden we're connecting it together. So talk about some of that. You know, you mentioned it. We might as well dive into, what do you mean by tribalism? And, you know, what does that mean in this kind of environment of construction?
Okay. Well, that's it. I tell you, I have a, even from your previous point, I had an example of that even with me. And you know, Jeff, you're saying the same thing, being an IT guy. And as I was, you know, doing the on-site testing of, you know, with all the superintendents on how Cymax was working at the time, you know, I came on there, you can clearly tell, you know, I'm an outsider. I have no decals on my hard hat. You know, I'm just I got like a squeaky clean Visi vest on, my boots don't have me, you know, clearly, right? I'm not pulling up in an F-150. So I'm not part of that whole thing. But what I managed to do was I managed to go, look, I know I'm different. I know I'm not one of you guys, and I'm not going to try and be. I'm not, because you actually, believe it or not, do need what I have. And I'm just going to be myself and help you. And I do understand that you might not like technology. You might think in the early days, there was a lot of, hey, this is big brothers, you know, who's my data is being used, you know, you're tracking me, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, we're not doing any of that. All we're trying to do is eventually your job will be a lot easier. And now we see that now people, when they use Cymax, they're like, you know, the field loves it. And they're like, okay. Now we kind of see the rubbers hitting the road, but it takes a long time for that to happen with the evolution of construction and technology together. So, I mean, the tribalism side of things, I mean, you guys probably know this better than anybody. And I listened to the couple other podcasts and that you have with some other guests, which took me down the rabbit hole of watching a YouTube video that was in Sydney, Australia, and looking at mental health, looking at all the stuff. And it's really... tribalism, it's interesting when, I'm going to say the C word for a second, the COVID word, because this really highlighted the bifurcation of these tribes, because the office could say, oh, sorry, you get a little sniffle there, you can't come to the office. Well, on the job site, that job had to keep being built. People would be masking of the fact that they had anything because they needed to make their money and they needed to hit that job site. So they had to show up, otherwise the whole job would pause. So you had this whole, and now as we are post-COVID, now we're still at, oh, you've got a little bit of a sniffle, don't come to the office. So the office has this, oh, I can work from home. Well, you can't work from home on the job site. You don't have that luxury. So that inherently is going to create some sort of tension where half the company has options, the other one doesn't.
I think that difference in environment is like so critical. And as you were, you know, sort of planning Cymax and looking at it, I know you had to kind of look at the difference in how people were going to use software in a wicked environment, an outdoor environment with weather, with noise, with frustration. I had somebody come up with me and they had a voice to text program early on. And I said, have you been on a job site? Have you tried this on a job site? Because job sites are super noisy and this works really well in the office, but might not work out there. So as you were going from site to site and inside, and I got to say, it does feel like a tribe when you go somewhere that's a different environment than where you live. That's for me. Like, tribe means there's a mountain tribe, there's a valley tribe, there's the river tribes, there's the lake tribes. And really, tribalism for me was always about that environment. And that job site environment is wicked compared to the office. So as you were developing SiteMax and you're starting to, you know, go out there and plan for it, what were some of the biggest impacts that caused you to say, hey, I would like to focus? How did you focus and figure out what features you wanted to introduce, you know, sort of into that outdoor environment?
Well, a lot of it was, you know, where are they losing efficiencies? I mean, time was a huge one. I mean, can they do their time cards? I mean, the time cards was like after photos, that's like daily reports, photos, time. How do we get the time? And as we scaled that product and that feature, time got more complex and more complex in every jurisdiction we would go to because of union rates and et cetera. And now our time system is bananas. Like, you know, frankly, I mean, I don't develop software anymore. I look at it, I'm like, oh my God, that thing does a lot of stuff. To be able to spit out time reports that are that nuanced based on where those people are, I mean, hey, everyone can take in time. No one can spit out time properly. It's a different ballgame. So yeah. So that was one of the that was one of the things. So I mean, it was essentially like, where are they? Where's the leakage? Is it information that they're not getting right? Often to the customers, you know, that project view thing that I was telling you about that we had that was behind the TVs. We ended up sending that out to the client. The client would be able to see this sort of curated view of their project, and they'd be able to log in and see that. And that particular construction company had their customer who had actually ended up getting rid of the Mac Minis. And we had an Apple TV app. So they would plug the Apple TV app in, and they would have their projects, because it would only show that client's projects. And I went to a development office, you know, because I had to make sure that the Apple TV was working. Of course, I was doing everything. And then, yeah, that's, I would see that, yeah, they would be proud of that. They say, oh yeah, this is, and it would have their logo on it and all that, and sponsored by and built by at the bottom. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, that's just like way ahead of the time of a strategic advantage for a problem we know today, right? One of the biggest problems we have is like owners just want to see that it's getting done, just want to see that it's progressing. And man, and thinking about when you launched that, that's a long time ago. And I would have never thought to do the app. That's a cool option. So I imagine those kind of things have incorporated their way back into the software. Have you taken some of that idea, some of that, you know, visibility, and built it into SiteMax that drives a few other parts of the business?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you have, recently we've been doing something that's, we have this thing called SiteFlow, which we just launched, which is actually really cool. So you scan the QR code when you get to the job site, and it's for subtrades. So that they, and you don't have to download an app. All you do is you put in your phone number and it sends you a temporary password. You put it in every time. So you don't have to remember something. You don't have to download anything. And then what it does is you create your own steps that you want the subtrade to follow. And then it tells you how many steps they've done, whether that's fill out a form, take a picture, watch a video, read an instruction, put a signature, whatever that is. So it allows you to build this little flow, and then the code comes out and you can just post it or send out a link. So that's something that, you know, there's a big problem, I think, with a lot of construction platforms now is that getting everyone on the same page, that they actually want to get on the same page. And that's the other part. A lot of things are mandated, and it creates a lot of tension. And this is mandated, but light enough so everyone can still do their own stuff. Because you keep in mind, you've got businesses showing up at a business to do business.
Yeah.
And they got their own stuff. So if you think they're all going to just like deprecate everything that made their company go, often you'll see a subtrade that's actually more successful than the GC that's hiring them. It's bigger, depending on what it is. It could be an electrical contractor that's huge and it's doing a smaller job.
Yeah, there are a lot of time the majority of the work. I mean, we think we've been seeing this like on the bigger projects, the MEPs are 70% of the scope that's getting done.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And it's an interesting one too, because I didn't even think about it when we were talking about the tribes, but like you have tribes and then you have multiple tribes on a single site, right? Because you have the GC tribe, the mechanicals, the electricals, the framers, the drywallers, you know, all these different folks, all these different tribes. And man, I was thinking about it. I you said time earlier, and I was talking to a foreman the other day, and he was like, Jeff, let me tell you what my life is like. I spend more of my time, like, this phone is awesome, but more of my time closing an app, opening an app, finding an app, going to a thing, doing a thing, logging into a thing, getting logged out, forgetting a thing. And just the simplicity of scan the QR code, walk through the flow, and go.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
And the text, by the way, I mean, hopefully that's not IP'd, because somebody's going to hear that one and probably steal it from you. But that is a cool, send me the text and let me log in. I'm using a couple of new pieces of software for myself for the new business. And I love those because I forget. And I'm the, security, use a crazy strong password. You know, I like to use the one from my iPhone that it recommends, or one from one of my other key pass app type things. And then I'm like, I can't remember that. And I had one the other day, and it was just like, well, would you like us to just send you a text? And I was like, why, yes.
Well, yes.
Yes, I would
really
love
appreciate that.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, there is like a checking in between that goes on behind the scenes. So, not anybody is just scanning that thing. It does have to kind of recognize your company, and that works really well. And it's really, really low friction. Yeah. But, it's interesting when you talk about the tribalism thing, because it seems like such a taboo word these days. And, yeah. But you watch a hockey game. That's tribalism. One team's against the other. They're just dudes, right? I mean, that's just it. Same with football. Mm-hmm. Same with everywhere else in the world. In soccer, you want to go in Europe somewhere or South America, and you see tribalism with sports teams. I mean, it's bananas. I mean, they have to have security in between, from one side of the field to the other. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing. This is celebrating everyone's differences is good. It's good. It's really, really good, because then you get to know people. Like if we didn't have like a perfect example, if we didn't even have this, introduction that we had before coming on this podcast, I didn't know you guys at all. All I do is listen to you on your podcast and listen to you online, but we've never had a chance to interface. So that right there, I get to know you guys, and I appreciate who you are and what you do and that nuanced kind of perspective I have. Without that, we're just kind of like muting each other to be all these drones that we're all the same. We're not. We're all different, and we're amazing.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
For the show, you're saying listening to Sasha about mental health, and a big part of that is a lack of belonging. We have sort of a culture that's saying you're not allowed to belong to these tribes, but I know a guy named Mike Zalanovich. To talk to him about his brothers and sisters in the union, and that's how he feels. And that is his tribe, and that is his brothers and sisters, and that's where he belongs. And I think there's a huge value to having a group that you belong to. And just like anything else, if you belong to every group, you don't belong to any group. You know what I mean? There's no way to democratize belonging to a group. You have to actually pick a group that you wish to belong in, that something brings you together. And maybe it's building a building, or maybe it's building a part of a building. But I think it's that shared experience that they have on the job site that allows that cohesion. And I think it should be encouraged to a certain extent. I do think, and we should talk about it, I do think there's a big tension between office and field because of the idea that there's supervising going on, but you're not in my environment. You're going to tell me what to do, but you're not experiencing my life experience. You're going to talk at me about how this is done. And that's why I did like, the fact that what you're built is building tasks in the field for the field. Mm-hmm. You know, like you are taking advantage of the fact that that software is there. And I did do a deep dive into your software and I was like, wow, this is a complete project management suite. It's simple, which is important. I think people make things awfully complex and we do not have time to take a class on how to fill out our time card. If we have to take three classes to fill out our time card, we have a fundamental problem. So I really see that, but I think, you know, as we start to, you know, you were talking about that, there really are kind of saying, hey, it's not a good idea to be part of a group because you exclude others. And that's not necessarily true, man. I have a family group here and my family has a lot of friends. Not everybody's family, but everybody's friends. You know, so I feel like we need to make room for those relationships. But I do think I think it's tough to say that I'm going to take pictures of you and put them in this other tribe's, you know, base camp and they're going to watch you without you feeling nervous about that. Have you got any pushback on that tension between, hey, I'm now sort of more, more accountable to those people in the office or they have more visibility?
Initially, yeah. But I think that, you know, technology is ubiquitous now. I mean, it's just, it is what it is now. It's the new, you know, our, we always try and say that, you know, with Sitemax, we need to be the air nailer. We need to be the nail gun of software. You know, if we're not the nail gun, we're not doing our job. So it has to have that benefit to that person. Once they feel that it's doing something for them, there is a serious difference between the why should I do something. So when money's involved and there's different reasons, keep in mind, and this is another thing that really does create tribal differences between the field and the office, is that often the office careers are more planned, as in, I went to project management school, I want to go work at a construction company, I went to engineering school, I want to work in an engineering firm, blah, blah, blah. Or I have just worked my way up and now I work at the office. In the field, you have a number of things, depending on the different stratas of pay and different stratas of job type. You have people that have to go on job sites because they're struggling with money or life problems or whatever it is. And it's like the job site was where they could get a job and it's what they know. You have those people. And then you also have people who are, you know, rough and tough people who are amazing at what they do. It's a sub trade that is so talented. And then now they have a company and they're school of hard knocks. They're going to do their thing. And then they're a tribe of people who is like, hey, yeah, we get in, we get it done. And we'll do it on budget, on schedule, and do our best, and are really good at there's three things. And I'm going to take this from one of the YouTube thing in Sydney, is that there were three classifications on discourse. The first was what someone's IQ, and the other one was what someone's EQ. And then there was the DQ, which I haven't really, obviously the first two we've heard ad nauseum, but the third one was decency quotient. And that is unbelievable.
Are you a construction company that's inundated with applications? Are you struggling to get technology adoption? Are you worried you're creating data silos? We refer to that as gray work. You want to learn more about gray work and how leading construction companies are getting past it? Then join me at QuickBase's Empower 2024. Go to quickbase.com/empower.
A decency quotient. And so, Jonathan, when you're saying that, yeah, you know, everyone's in their tribes, blah, 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 you need to have a decency quotient ethos around that tribe. Because if you're a bunch of jerks, then no one wants to be in that tribe anyway, and you're just going to get ousted by the greater good because, you know, that's just the way it is. It's not that, you know, the world is not going that way. So that decency quotient is everything. And I think that that's really what we're going to bring back to the job site is that. And I think it exists inherently. Most construction people are great people, really. Like, they work hard, you know?
That's, it's the difference between a tribe and a gang, man. The decency thing.
Yes.
Like, you can have tribes on a job site, but you don't want gangs on a job site. You know,
Jonathan, you just nailed it. You just nailed it. I think you should, you got to do a little YouTube clip on that one. Boom. There it is.
Yeah, the difference. I love that, the DQ too, because it can help the office and the field come together. That was the other thing that I figured out for myself, was just experiencing what was told to me over the years before I got in construction, that it was rough and tumble and dirty And I didn't see it for its craft, for its professionalism, for its skill. And it was funny because that's how I made my way in IT. Like, I accidentally got into IT and I really never felt like I was smarter. And it was funny because you'd have somebody say like, oh, you're so smart. And it's like, well, I can't do the thing you're doing. Like, James, you're designing a logo and I can't design that logo. But if the computer goes meh and it won't work, I can fix that. That doesn't make me any smarter because I can't then fix it and then make the logo. Because if I make the logo, you think the one you got was crappy. Mine's going to be awful, you know? And it was the same thing with masons and with everybody working in the field. It was like, I could never do that. And yeah, sure, I can make your phone work and I can make your time card spit out easier. But I'm not going to build the building, right? It's going to condemn everything. So I love that focus on it, but I'm going to spin this tribe thing because James and Jonathan and I are in another tribe together that we share because James, you're a podcaster as well.
Yeah. So the site visit podcast.
Yeah. So guys listening, you have a new show to go listen to, the Site Visit podcast, and talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you've got going on there and what drove you to dive into yet another venture.
Well, it isn't really another venture. It's, you guys probably know this better than anybody. I mean, from being in the advertising business in my previous life, you know, media and exposure goes in many different cycles. Google ads don't work. Email blasts are over. There's lots of ways. The new way, which I really like, the new way of having exposure and being able to have your point of view is by advocacy and supporting the industry that you're in. So the site visit is paid for by Sitemax. And, you know, we do this. We have like BuildX here is in Vancouver. They have us. We had 14 interviews we did on the floor. We set up there and it was awesome. You guys have probably done that before. And it's like, So the reason I wanted to do this is we really don't get a chance to talk that much. It's, you know, 7 to 4 o'clock out in the field and there's a lot of things that need to be talked about and a lot of entrepreneurial stories. There's a lot of perspective. You know, I have a bee in my bonnet about the brand of construction and we'll do this on another podcast. I'll have you guys on, but we should really dig into this because, you know, just from a super macro point of view. Okay. We're like, okay, let's go and do show and tells at high schools to show, you know, how to get into the trades. And then you hear in the news, mental health and suicide is like the highest in construction. And mothers are like, why do I want my son to go in this? Like, we're not helping ourselves from a media point of view. Yes, it is very, very important. We've got to get this mental health thing checked and fixed. And the people that are doing that are amazing. And I actually have some invites out to talk to them as well because I want to help. But I think that the industry in itself is going through a transformation right now. It's getting less dirtier every day. It will eventually be all people are in control rooms and it's going to look like something from Avatar where they're on joysticks and they're actually not on site. This is all telematically controlled by robots. This is what's going to be happening. But the people will still be there. They'll just not be there. Ish. Ish. So it's going to be a really cool thing. Like the brand of construction. The reason of the site visit is I really want to bring people into it. I got to do that. I got to make it cool.
I think that's a great journey to go on, to try to really make that transparent. I know I was at an Autodesk event a long time ago and realized how disconnected a lot of the understanding of what's going on the job site was from the engineers and everybody else. Cause the guy stood up there and he says, oh, you people out on the job site, you love to solve problems. You're problem solvers. And the dude in the front row, like started laughing and he says, I'm from the field. He says, I don't want any problems. He says, I want to build things. He said, that's why I got in the business. I want to build things. I don't want to work on your software. Play with your technology. That's why, you know, honestly, some of the biggest problems I see in tech are they make it too hard to do. The person feels like they're no longer building, they're building, they're just doing the software. You know, you have a good solution for that and what you're doing. But that idea that they don't even know that what a lot of people want to do is actually just build things is disturbing. You know, like they're not out there to solve problems. They wouldn't mind having a day where there's no problems. In fact, I think a lot of them would prefer no problems. But the idea was, oh, no, we're looking in from the outside and we just think you're problem solvers. So I think you're right again in that it's going to take a lot of discussion before we get to the point where we understand what those tribes in the field are really about and where their culture is at and what they value. And I actually think even part of that will lead to better mental health on the job sites, because part of that's just us not understanding the nature of that career choice, of that aspiration. So, you know, I gotta ask, since you kind of talked about the all automated job site, and I'm a complete nerd computer, how close do you feel some of that is? Because I think everybody's got like sort of a different gauge, and it has a lot to do with who you talk to. But you're unique. You're in software. You're from Canada. You're in a relatively, you know, you deal with a lot of smaller contractors, actually, you were telling us. So yep. What's your feel about when those days are coming? Are we 20 years off? Are we 40 years off? Where are we at?
It will take hold when the lowest common denominator has this low barrier of entry. And that's currently just doesn't exist. You know, it will be an all BIM at some point. When that happens, I don't know. The architectural firms and designers, you know, they got to stop spitting out PDFs, right? I mean, at some point it has to. I would like to have a solid answer for you, but I think there will be something that will be, okay, that was the catalyst. That was what changed it all. There was a company, you know, Digital Blueprints, you know, that made a huge change when you could, oh, you can share these with me? Hang on a sec. Just give me your phone number. Boom. And suddenly I have plans in my iPad or my phone. That was huge at the time. So now we got to figure out like, what is that next thing? So being able to have all visibility on the job site, cameras are going everywhere, but batteries need to be better. Power needs to be better. There's a bunch of fundamental things that are internet connectivity has to be way better. So once those start really being, I mean, let's put it this way, even your home internet, okay? Sometimes it's, oh, what's the upload? Okay, well, the upload is 1/10 of the download speed. Okay, well, why? Why is that? Okay, you can't have that with cameras. I'm not watching videos. I'm uploading videos, people. Come on. Like the telcos have to get it together in order to support that. And I don't know what the US is like, but in Canada, there's only like two networks or something. And everyone else is a sub brand on top of that. They all brand it their own way. And they're, oh, yeah, come on our network. And you find out it's actually on the system of the other one. So, you know, and they're in a game where they can't provide all of that internet connectivity as fast as they want because they're trying to stagger it out to keep you paying. So there's a whole financial incentive there that's just not even making sense. So these sort of blocks of batteries, connectivity, cameras, this will be the sort of, that will be the when the floodgates open, when all of that is completely seamless.
It's been a growing problem or a bane of the problem, I guess, because, you know, that was the, when I first got into construction, that was the wake up call for me was that, wait, I'm used to doing things in offices that have internet already. And yeah. Well, there's no internet when there's no utilities, there's no nothing. So how do you go that last mile? How do you do that? That's why, you know, many of the softwares, probably yours at the time, had to have offline capabilities in the beginning. And I mean, and then I remember the praise of 5G and James saying that will be the end and everything will be connected and data will flow at lightning speeds. And well, I don't know about you, but this thing says 5G, but it ain't lightning depending on where I'm at, unless I'm connected to Wi-Fi, which requires a connection. However, James, I think you're right. We're seeing great companies out there push the technology capabilities, the connectivity capabilities to the job site and to be pretty much ubiquitous so that we can start to use these other technologies. I'll add on top to what he said, Jonathan, is my thought is things like built robotics, where they're starting to put retrofit current systems to current equipment to operate autonomously is a fascinating way to see the switch start to happen. I don't think we're well, and I covered this recently, you know, we're about to see the first run of autonomous trucking across the roads in the United States, thanks to legislation and testing and emergency facility. It's going to happen. This year, 2024, there will be trucks driving down our highways that are finally fully autonomous. And that's going to be an interesting, I mean, that's a big shift towards the future. And do I think it's 5 years now? Do I think it's 10? No. I think it will look far different because I also think, you know, Jonathan, you know this, a lot of the prefabrication and modular stuff we're doing is going to require really cool new equipment.
It's going to be really cool.
To deliver it. It is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like modular construction? Absolutely. Because it's like you're essentially building tooling then that's on the job site to be able to and that's going to be the really, really cool part. You know, I have a very, very short little thing to say that actually had a podcast the other day with this guest, and he's from this company called Servipod. Yeah, Servipod, he calls it. And it's essentially, you know, when you go on site and you have those, everyone comes on with their tripod and they do their, you know, they triangulate the lasers and they're for doing layout. Anyway, he has this pole and it gets either cast in the concrete or it's actually hilted in, and he has 90 degree ones to come off, you know, the elevator columns, et cetera. And what it does is it allows everybody to have been at the same place every time who comes and does setup for that to do the layout. Amazing. And I said to him, you, and this is the idea, and this is kind of how I geek out on the stuff. So I think we're all going to be on par with this. So I said, look, you got this pole that's essentially on the job site. He's like, yep. And I said, and he goes, it stays there throughout. I said, okay, that's great. So I said, how big is it? He's like, well, the footprint's like 6 inches by 6 inches. I said, okay. And then it's what, like 4.5 feet tall? He's like, yep. I said, well, that real estate can have batteries. You can have a USB port in there. You can have iBeacons in there. So that could control a 00 XYZ point for robotics. Dude, I mean, you have this real estate, you need to maximize that sucker. And he's like, oh yeah, okay, well that's some good ideas there. So anyway, James from Servipod, he's from Ireland. Amazing. You guys got to go check that out. But yeah, just looking at what opportunities, even just go and be there sitting and just look around, be in an open slab, you know, on a multi high rise. And you're like, huh, what is not being used here? There's real estate everywhere for technology and people aren't seeing it. So that's a perfect example of that. Anyway, I digress.
Actually, you hit on one of the other big problems we have too, and that's figuring out your exact location for equipment, for everything else. DeWalt back in the days, man, like a decade ago, had a really cool demo where they talked about being able to triangulate the tip of a drill to basically have a line that you saw in your glasses that would bring the drill straight to that point. And I know a bunch of people have tried that with AR. And the problem is just figuring out 2/8 of an inch. And that's, yeah, the, you know,
it's
like
the
to
zero,
an inch,
zero point.
Yeah. To one, it's an inch, it's fine, but you have to get to 1/8 for it to actually be fabricatable and like good. So getting that, I think, is going to be a big change. And it looks like with all of those onboard cameras that you're going to have on the hard hats, on the glasses and everything else, we're going to get closer and closer to that point of being able to triangulate and truly know where things are, down to those finer grains. I do think it's going to be quite a while before we see the overall everything by robot on a job site, because it's so easy to do that in a manufacturing set, but like out in that environment, man, it's tough on equipment, it's tough on people, it's just a tough environment.
Yeah, factory floor changes every day in construction.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yeah, yeah, but it'll be great. I couldn't think of a better place, though, for the success of autonomy to happen than the most ever-changing environment and dirty and dangerous. And like a lot of things are created in these great little clean room factory, clean room areas, and then you put them out in the world and they don't work. So it's a fantastic opportunity to see where we could go. And James, to your point, like, I want to go back to the beginning of that and saying, like, we have an image problem in this industry, and we've focused on this here a lot and talked about it a lot, is that it's a marketing problem. I mean,
it is, yeah.
I know we have mental health issues, and I know we have the suicide issues, and those are real. But I will be honest, our armed forces have the same problems.
Yeah.
But yet they have a very good, very unified marketing perspective, and they a recruiting perspective. And you don't hear people talking about going into the armed forces as some negative, as some bad career path, right? And we need to take a note out of that book and build a unified funnel. And I've said this, and I get to sit in this interesting, unique position. The one thing about your tribes is we got to stop worrying about which tribe they land in and take some of your marketing expertise and make a really big funnel together and let them fall through the funnel and join us and find their tribe. Find if they're an electrician, find if they're into concrete, find if they're into heavy equipment, crane operation, whatever it might be. But we have to band together, because right now what's the problem is we're fighting over scraps of our own. It's like we're cannibalizing ourselves. It's like you shouldn't care if you go to that high school if they end up going over to the mechanical trade because that's where they felt comfortable. You should just know that they're going to help me build buildings in the end. And it's a, I've said this a lot of times, and maybe I don't have the voice I wish I did in that respect to grow that, but that's my take on it. And that's why I think your show's so great for telling those stories. And that's how we do this as storytellers.
So there's one anecdote I'm just going to give you guys, and I'm going to just have one little statement after it. So my daughter's 15 years old, and we get her school newsletter, and it has this invitation to learn about the trades for grade 10, 11, and 12. So I reach out to that person, and it was a provincial funded education program. And so I reach out to this fellow and got on the phone with him. We chatted, and he said, it's interesting that, you know, you're chatting about this. I said, yeah, I think it's like super important for this. And because obviously I advocate and realize how much opportunity there is in construction. And he said, you know, I had this mother call me and said, how dare you suggest my son should not go to university? And what I would say is, have you seen what universities are like these days? I mean, look at what's going on now. I mean, look, if you want to go and you have a specific educational goal for for an endpoint that you want to go in, like my daughter's like, here, I want to go and do this, and I'm going to go to school to do that specific thing. Great, do it. Just like in the old days, you want to be a doctor, lawyer, whatever it is, go do that. But now going to post-secondary for the sake of it, to find out who you are, kind of an expensive thing to do. Whereas construction, we have to destigmatize this. And the main reason is, think about this, is the evidence of the dirtiest part of construction is out in the open. That's all they see. All they see is the, you know, stuff showing up and everyone's stuff all over their clothes and a porta potty. And, you know, that's all they see. It's what the mother sees. She doesn't see the fact that all the stuff that we're doing. And like, I'm in the construction business. We got a tech company. Why don't you be in construction there? There's robotics, there's tools, there's, you don't have to necessarily be that. It's such a vast industry. And, you know, the people who are, you know, go dirt biking and have lake homes and go wakeboarding and have cabins and all the stuff, they're in construction, man. Like, you want to go and have $200,000 debt and come out and know about sociology? Go for it. But you know what? I think it's going to be way better if you're more pragmatic now and building for the future. So, hey, mom that says, hey, how dare you? Actually, how dare you is what I would say.
Yeah, we have to fight that back. And you're right. And just a little stat, because then I'm going to drop the mic and move us on. But
all right,
only 46% of college grads currently work in their field of study.
There it is.
Only 46%. That means 50% of them went because they, well, just felt they had to and didn't have a way. And I talked about this on other shows, is what a great experience to, you know, maybe not know what you're doing, go and learn some trades, learn some things, And I had a mechanical contractor recently, Jonathan, talk to me about this, of coming out, not knowing, going and becoming a plumber and a pipe fitter and growing and learning, and then realizing, hey, there's a business to this whole thing, and I think I should learn the business, and went off and got the education and the business school, and came back, started his own company, and became very successful. And he said, but if I had done that in the other direction, I would have failed epically, you know, because I just didn't have the smarts and the grounding. And I always, and not for nothing, the risk-taking, you know, it was able to take the risk because they knew they had a trade to fall back on. Like, if my company doesn't work, I can still go back, pull on the gloves, put on the high-vis gear and start doing things again, or go into the fab shop and weld and do those things. So great way to go. Awesome conversation, James. Tell everybody where to go find out a little bit more about SiteMax and the show. Visit Podcast.
You got two URLs, are easy. SiteMax.cloud and thesitevisit.com. There you go.
There you go. And I suggest y'all tune in because it's got some great episodes. All right, Jonathan, it's now time for the Construction Technology News of the Week. Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built.
I'm going to go first with the heat wave. We're going to go with the hottest year on record spurs innovation in climate adaptive building. And the reason I wanted to do this is they started to get into basically CPMs. So basically a liquid that you can use within your building materials that will store up heat and then release it in the evening when you need it. And this type of passive energy was what we used to see a lot of. And then all of a sudden, it became sort of passé to do a lot of the passive energy. And now with some of the reports that just came out from the UN and really looking at global climate, there's now a real argument to let's go back and let's look at this and let's look at how we can leverage this as an industry and within construction. And really, I may have said the acronym wrong. These are PCMs, phase change materials. And that's a big word for basically what you could think about as reverse ice. Okay. So you apply heat and it becomes liquid, but when you remove the heat, it pushes the heat back out and it becomes solid once more. All right. So like it's basically like a storage container. And, you know, I'm kind of like a backwoods hacker. I don't know. Like, I like the hillbilly technology too. And the hillbillies used to do this all the time when they'd set up like cabins, is we'd set up, you know, walls that were basically there to just store heat and release it in the evenings. And they're super effective. And people don't realize, like, these aren't a little bit effective. These are completely effective from an energy standpoint. They're green. And like we said the other time, maybe this one has a little bit more of a green premium. But it's still, you know, I brought up the article because I really wanted people to start looking. I think materials are one of the technologies that we don't hit on enough. You know, you talk about the tech that's the software, talk about the tech that's the tools. Well, really, it's the materials where we're going to see some of the biggest change in construction, because we can't build the way we used to build before, if you know what I mean. Did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah. I love this one because we've talked about some of this over the years and had some fun laughing that, you know, there was the edible concrete we had on at one point, and Tanis Levinick brought that one on and we laughed a lot about that one. But in the end, like, they're self-healing concrete. Like, one of the biggest problems is once concrete's exposed to a crack, then water gets in, air gets in, it erodes, and boom, you're done. But with a living, breathing material, once it cracks, that's exposed to the air, these microbes regrow and seal it. And so when I saw this, I was like, oh, see, this is the thing too. Like, we can do so much in construction. We have a huge opportunity, right? 40% of carbon comes from us. And so we are the largest country when it comes to that, if you look at us as an industry. So we have room to do that. But also these buildings that we leave behind, if we can do it differently than we did before, they can help living and breathing, changing, let's just be honest, the damage that we have done. There's a lot of pointing fingers. We can point fingers or we can focus on a problem. And I think focusing on a problem with innovation like this, you know, we've had on before, Jonathan, it reminded me that, you know, there was this idea of, can you build, make windows that are actually in the end, solar panels that can absorb and power buildings. And there's, you know, been tries at putting, green, experiences on the top because the releasing of heat. And if you don't think this is a problem, like look at areas like Phoenix. You know, Phoenix's pavement and all of the parking lots and roads actually change the weather pattern completely because of how much heat it reflects and how long it reflects it. It actually makes the storms go around them. It's amazing. And the storms that make it over them are so drastic. They have to be to make it through that. That it's like every time they get rain, it's catastrophic. So we got to end that. And who better to do it than us, right, James?
Yeah, totally. You know what the best currency for this is the word virtue, okay? So, I mean, we're in the virtue economy right now. So developers need to really like double down on this and make this the new vegan of the building. Like, hey, man. Oh yeah, like I'm all vegan. Yeah, my building I live in is, you know, it dissipates all this heat. Oh yeah, totally. Like, yeah, and my dog's a rescue and I do CrossFit. I mean, all that kind of stuff, right? It's yeah. It's really virtue. It's transferring on meaning of helping the planet. And that will drive the economy of those materials being used.
Well, and even from, and Jeff, you pointed it out, like beyond overall climate change, which people argue about. There's the just environmental change of it's not seriously hot in that parking lot that you're in. Like if you have never been in the middle of a city just sweltering and dying of heat, you know, it doesn't need to be that way. Like it really doesn't. Like local little areas of heat congestion that aren't even climate can be solved with a lot of these materials. And for me, like you said, I'm doubling down. If we can get away with getting this because we view it as a virtue, that's lovely. I just would like to get to it any way, shape, or form. Because
a
lot of it's wonderful from a long-term standpoint.
Well, and it's going to be the new economy. It might be the virtue now, James, is a good one, but it's actually going to be how, and I, you know, you guys can check out the episode with Brittany Harris, but they're already seeing this in the UK. They look at a building and its long-term value is more based now on its environmental impact than, and its efficiencies than necessarily the cost it was to build, right? That used to be the deal is how much did it cost? Great. I can sell it to you for this and I can make that profit. But actually real estate development and owners are looking at, okay, no, that's the cost, but how much is it going to cost me to run? What is it going to look like from a green perspective and from a decarbonization perspective? And wow, it's amazing when you measure something and you change the rules, how people react to it. So that will come next. What else you got for us, Jonathan?
I actually went backwards from that one. So I saw that one and I was all about the PCMs. And then I'm like, they mentioned a couple of reports and one of the reports was coming out of the UN. And that's my next article and is building materials and the climate and construction, a new future. And there's a report, the download link's there. We'll include it in the episode. And what it really hit on three areas. A really good report though. Went through each material, kind of broke down the material from a carbon standpoint, also from a longevity standpoint, from a total energy of installation standpoint, all of these other attributes, kind of looking at materials and construction as a whole in a very systematic way. I loved it. The three main takeaways, though, were moving into the future. What they'd like you to do is avoid, which is minimize raw material extraction, and you know, encourage reuse, recycling within construction. We've had on I don't know how many guests who entire business is set up around reuse of amazing materials. I still like that dude's machine. We had a guy on with the machine,
Eric Law.
Oh yeah, dude. It'll pull a beam out from an old building. These are the best beams to use for wood, and it'll actually just strip it of all the metal so you can use it. And that reuse of that material, it's a higher quality material, low cost of reuse, a localized, you know, production, just all of that. And the other one was Shift. They, you know, looking at the transition from to bio-based materials, low carbon materials. And they didn't lie about it. They went into some of the materials like bamboo and wood and others. And they said, well, yeah, the bamboo and the wood are fine, but all these adhesives are not. So like, you get the virtue for the trees, but the reality is not the virtue. The reality is we have to look at how these things actually end up at the end of the day. Are they helping or hurting us in this problem? And then improve. And improvement was in there was sort of that wish list of technology is a magic wand and we will come and bless the material. And all of a sudden the concrete that is a major problem will not be a problem anymore. which it did, like if you read through it, and it's a long report, but again, very, very good, very, very well put together. You do get a little bit of that idea if you're working in technology of, I don't know what technology you're talking about, but I've never seen it before.
Yeah, I love it. Good quantification, right?
Yeah.
It a good breakdown. So totally check it out because it follows. I like that you went backwards there too from the PCMs back and then some of the realities on where we are. So I'm going to jump us because I got an interesting one that I want James and you to really talk about is McCarthy and Vaughn JV tapped for a $5 billion Dallas hospital build. I just want that to sink in. $5 billion. The new complex, this is from Construction Dive, our friends over there. The new complex will have 552 beds and what the owners claim will be one of the largest pediatric hospital campuses in the country. I thought that the $2.5, $3 billion EV factories were huge. How do you even go about thinking about developing and working together? Think about how many trades, how much sequencing, how many things are going to have to be done and how long this is going to take for the size of construction. I think to me, the point of the article was to bring to the forefront the absolute enormity of the scale of what current construction companies and developers are building right now compared to, you remember back, I mean, even when I started, a $200 million project was a lot. And there's just, Jonathan, I can't even wrap my head around the platforms and the connective tissue and the things it's going to take to keep this many people with this much money on this large of a project. 552 beds, 4.5 million square feet of construction. It's just amazing.
You know, up here locally in Pittsburgh, they built a hydrogen cracker, right? $5 billion, $3 billion maybe. Actually, it ended up being way more than that when they got done. But but they decided to build it. And what we realized really quick is you wear out every supply chain in the surrounding geography completely. Hmm. You take every workforce from everybody that's not paying high wages, and that workforce is going to work for this other project. You know, it is epic to see some of these huge mega projects go in, but my gosh, logistically, just saying, okay, we're going to have enough switchgear to do this, which means, I mean, you wait a year for switchgear right now. Then we got copper. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, at least they picked partners that can pull it off is what it comes down to. There are very few people that could pull off the amount of planning and logistics that will take to build a hospital like this. I would be interested also, you know, given our last article, to see how much of this they're going to try to implement sort of new materials and new construction methodology. Because like I said, if you go with the standard supply chain and you put a $5 billion stressor on it, I don't care where you are, you're going to, you're going to, there's going to be no job. There's going to be no people left to build that job. And there probably isn't enough materials to build that job. What do you think, James? Man, that's a mega project.
Yeah. I mean, that local impact is going to be bananas. I mean, I don't even know if you were to think you're going to try and get anything else done, even in that strata of number, even 1% of that, you're right. You know, Jeff, like that, you're not going to be able to get anybody. But, you know, when it comes down to the number, I mean, who thought we would be talking about $1 trillion companies in the stock market, right? I mean, it's just everything's added to zero. Butter's $9 now. I mean, here in Canada anyway, butter's $9. Like, you know, everything is more expensive. Everything has gone crazy. Like, I got an interesting stat for you. Check this out. So my dad said to me, because real estate's crazy here in Canada, my dad's like, okay, I have a stat for you. Because when I was a kid, you could get, we grew up in England. He goes, when I was a kid, you could get a house in a modest neighborhood in Wimbledon for the price of 2 Bentleys. Always. But now you can't even get a Bentley's like 600 grand, 700 grand in Canada here. I can't get a house in the West Side, a modest house for $1.4 million. It's just zero chance. They're like $3.5 million, right? I mean, lots of Bentleys. So the whole game has changed. $5 billion for a project. I mean, this is just where we're at these days because everything is so expensive. And, you know, we're trying to like affordability of housing, affordability of all this stuff. Well, it's all down to programs. Everything's safer now. Everything is, you know, more efficient now. I mean, everything has just gone crazy to the point where there's a reason it's $5 billion. It's because everyone's got their hand up.
You know, thinking about McCarthy and Vaughan, these are two of the most innovative, most forward-thinking, most, you know, with their integrated virtual delivery and the way that they work with their trades and the way that they really embrace digital delivery ahead of time. It's going to be pretty awesome to see. So if you're on that project and you're thinking about wanting to talk about it, you know, I might know a little show that wants to talk about it. So I'm going to move us to our last one though, because this one's interesting to me. And it's how Suffolk, this one comes from the BDC network. So building design and construction, how Suffolk Construction identifies contech and prop tech startups for investment and adoption. So this is something that we need to talk more and more about because the construction industry is involved in its own evolution, its own transformation. So Suffolk has invested in 27 different companies since 2019 through its Suffolk Technologies venture capital firm. And what this really talks about is they have two different ways to do it, 13 in a core portfolio and 14 through what they call their Boost Accelerator program. And I thought that was crazy because they had like a 200% increase in the Boost Accelerator program, people all across the world trying to get involved in it. And one of the big wins for them over time was a company called New Metrics. We all knew them, you know, had them on over the years and such a great story to hear from there. But what I thought was interesting is they have a couple of things that set them apart from other companies because they have the place to test it. They have the guts and the opportunity and the metrics and the job sites to put these technologies, robotics, startups through the ringer and through the testing process and give feedback, give real feedback. So it's really cool to see. And I think we're seeing more and more of it, but nobody at the scale like we see Suffolk doing. And they're looking at everywhere. You know, where are they looking to invest? They'll invest in anyone that they think is groundbreaking, anyone that they think is really bringing new ideas and new thoughts to how we solve these continual construction problems that exist. Jonathan, I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at this and just dig into it, but it's crazy what they're doing there.
You know, I think it's really cool. I think there's like two strategies you're starting to see these bigger companies move into. One is we're going to have like sort of a self-sufficient internal R&D, all right, where we're going to develop our own solutions. We're going to homebrew. We're going to, and it's going to have to be self-supportive. We're not going to like sink a bunch of money. And this other idea, which I think is catching on with, you know, people at Suffolk side of saying, no, we're going to start a VC firm. So we're going to make lots of money while still doing what amounts to R&D outside of our company. And, you know, honestly, be able to be more, you know, prospect across a wider range of solutions. You know, I think, you know, from a purely greedy standpoint, though, what worries me is whenever you see a VC or a company like this do an investment, they're going to take and they're going to adapt that technology to really suit their company's process and workflow. And at the super large company standards, you end up with very long processes that a small contractor couldn't do. You know, we see there's definitely a difference between a software that's built for dynamic agile use by a small contractor, where we concentrate on simplicity, we concentrate on that. And then these other ones where, you know, we're going to have to build a $5 billion hospital. Everything's going to be prefabricated. We have these great manufacturing lines and your software or solution is going to help us, you know, supercharge that. If I bring a robotic arm to a small contractor, he's not going to know what to do with it. If I bring it to Suffolk, they have a job for it. You know what I mean?
Yep. James, I'm interested because you probably have, and of course, as you know, Jonathan and I always argue about this stuff. So I think, you know, there's that. And what do you think about what Suffolk's doing and then kind of what Jonathan just had to say?
Yeah, I probably agree with that to some degree. I mean, especially when you're really close, the testing is really, really good in the early days because it does inform you with what you need and the genesis of ideas come there. But then they end up becoming super nuanced to that group. And then when you go to market with it, they're like, yeah, kind of, we don't do it all that way. And now you're sort of pigeonholed. Having said that, maybe that was a number of years ago. Maybe Suffolk's got this figured out. You know, maybe they're onto this. You know, saying that being a venture capital arm, yeah, I mean, that's when you get into Series A, Series B, Series C, it's D, it's can get pretty cutthroat. So they're going to have to deal with that part because these companies and ideas are not going to stay babies forever. So that there's that part. And also there's the failure rate of startups, you know, it's the one out of every nine. So, you know, the LPs in there are going to have a lot of fun with, you know, funds that are doing, you know, they're going to be just going by the wayside for that one big win. And the one big win in a nuanced market like construction typically is not a huge win. I mean, we've seen some big wins that we know, and they're few and far between. And some of these companies are 20 years old, and they didn't happen overnight. So we've seen a couple of, you know, shots of lightning throughout the last 10 years, but there aren't that many, right? So,
no. So
I mean, but who knows? I mean, the good thing is that they're trying, right? They're trying to do this stuff. Go for it. Like, we got to make changes. We got to do stuff. So yeah, good on them. That's what I say.
Yeah, I agree with you. Good on them. And you're right. It you never know what you're going to get out of it. But, you know, if you don't take a swing and if nobody's taking swings and if the industry itself's not taking swings, then we're missing out. And the good part here, too, is for other companies to start to realize that taking those swings yourself and being on top of it, you may see that very transformative thing that becomes disruptive to the industry coming and be able to evolve and adapt your business so that you can see it. But if you're not out there and if you're just waiting for that wave to hit you, you could be one of the ones that ends up on the wrong side of it. So great on you, Suffolk, and hopefully to hear more about them later. And I'm sure we'll be talking about them later. And with that, I got to wrap us up. James, thanks again for sitting down and joining us through the news and joining us through the show and becoming a new one of our podcast tribe.
Oh yeah,
members.
We're in it, man. We're in it. I got to send you our SiteMax hoodie. You guys got to get a couple of these. They're very,
I love a good hoodie.
Yeah, I'll get them over to you guys. I'll get your addresses and we'll send them over.
Well, Jonathan Marsh, man, it is great to have you. Thanks again, man, for sitting down with me. And as always, you know, my contrarian, my yin to my yang.
Right on. It was great to be here, Jeff. And I got to say, I'm not against what Suffolk's doing. I'm just always playing both sides. You know me.
Hey, man. Hey, we need good contrarians in the world. There's nothing wrong with it, my friend. So with that, I want to thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with James Faulkner. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.